Good evening. I am Hank Jones, and you are listening to Hank Jones Poly Sports here at Global Patriot Radio, where we can be found every day at blogtalkradio.com. Although, as I've said before, a couple of those days are kind of nebulous right now, but they're getting filled out. Vito and Al are working on it. Meanwhile, every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, you can catch Vito and Al, the Vito Esposito Show featuring Big Al, 6 p.m. Eastern Time every Monday. Mamma Mia, no Sharia. Wednesdays, it's me, Hank Jones, with Hank Jones Poly Sports, where politics and sports collide and destroy each other. 6 p.m. Eastern every Wednesday. Thursdays, I'm occasionally doing hankerings for usually an hour or so. Fridays, Vito has stepped away from being able to do the Take No Prisoners. He's got stuff going on. Saturday nights, Minister Usama Dakduk and the Beautiful Christie revealing the truth about Islam, 10 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time every Saturday. Meanwhile, I am here in the official Hank Jones Poly Sports Space Force Observation Outpost with the mini Aussie, who is outside eating right now. Wife is working diligently, but not over in acoustic Hankland. She is at our daughter's in Seattle as they leave for a wedding tomorrow in Italy. So Hank's better half is babysitting, or I should say is house sitting and pet sitting. Two dogs and a cat. Two of a really adorable golden retriever doggies. Not as adorable as the mini Aussie, but still pretty cool. I'm doing a short show today because I got stuff going on here, which includes taking care of the dog by myself. We've had storms here usually a time every day, and she does not like it. And she can't be over with the better half because the better half's gone. So she's here with me and coming up to my feet after she gets done eating. Speaking of Space Force, okay, so I've been catching some launches while I'm out at the East Coast of Florida, the Space Coast, paddleboarding, leading some paddleboard and kayak tours. I shouldn't say some. I'm doing it every day except for Wednesdays, basically. And seen some real beauties. I did not get to see the Falcon Heavy last Friday, as my wife and I actually took that night off so that we could go watch a friend of ours who has a band and was playing at a local brew pub. So we went down to watch that. I had told up my bosses, look, I've tried a couple times to go see him, and it never works out. So this time I got my wife on the job early to go, and so she could get us, she would make us go so that I wouldn't figure out a reason not to go. And when I say figure out, something always would come up and I wouldn't be able to go. Now I can go. She made me go. It was a great time too. Let's see. Well, like I said, it's a short show tonight because I got what's going on, but I got a lot. There's some good stuff. So let's talk about last week's losses that I deem significant. Last Wednesday, we lost Randy Meisner, former bassist and vocalist for the Eagles, age 77, complications of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD. I think it's chronic. Might be something else. Cardio obstructive pulmonary disease, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, Randy Meisner was noted for his lead vocal on their huge hit, Take It to the Limit, especially his live performances of the song. However, it was that song that also prompted him to leave when he felt he wasn't hitting it properly. Actually got into some fisticuffs with bandmates over the issue. I know, crazy, huh? And so Randy Meisner left the Eagles. He did play with them for some reunion stuff, but was no longer an active member and passes away at the age of 77. Kind of sad, really. I mean, he had a solo album, had a couple hits off that too. Last Thursday, we lost Beatle Bob, noted dancer and musician in the St. Louis music scene. He was known for his Beatles-like appearance and his arrhythmic dance style. Yeah, Beatle Bob was his name. Kind of bizarre. He was 69, complications from ALS. Friday, we lost former Canadian boxer Dave Hilton Sr. at age 82. He was a three-time Canadian champ. in three different weight classes. However, he was best known as the father and manager of his three sons, two of whom won world titles, notably Davey Hilton Jr., Davey Boy Hilton. Sunday, we lost actor, comedian, weirdo who got caught yanking in the men's room, Paul Rubens, a.k.a. Pee Wee Herman, to cancer at age 70. Known for his weird, childlike comedy, his brand became a hit with his kid show, Pee Wee's Playhouse, and the movie Pee Wee's Big Adventure. He became notorious when he was busted for indecent exposure at a Sarasota, Florida adult theater. He actually had a comeback, appeared in numerous non-Pee Wee roles, including an Emmy nomination as Best Guest Actor for an episode of Murphy Brown. He also appeared in the Jonathan Demme drama Blow. Monday, we lost Maria Fux. I don't know if it's because she was from Brazil, if it was pronounced differently, but it was Maria. Last name was spelled Fux at age 101. She was a brilliant dancer, Brazilian dancer, as well as a dance therapist. She used dance therapy to help people with assorted disabilities and conditions, and I featured this one because of the spelling of her last name. Surprised to learn she wasn't a porn star, so there's that. Don't forget the folks at Alliance Communications, Central Florida's 24-hour call center and messaging service, telephone answering and messaging services for your medical clinic, your hospital clinic, service companies large and small, real estate and property management, info gathering services. They do a great job. They work with remote staff as well as on-site staff. That enables them to be ready for any type of disaster because they have agents in various locales around the country. So if you're one of those companies that never went back to the office after COVID or you need after-hours coverage, give them a call. If you're one of those people who likes doing remote work, call at 800-555-3738 or visit them on the internet at alliancecommunications.com. I welcome Duck Northwest Media to the chat room, a loyal listener in recent months. Thank you, sir, or ma'am. I don't even know. I don't want to assume. Which brings us to how you can listen to and connect with our show. Of course, you can listen live here at Global Patriot Radio. Go into blogtalkradio.com, look for the live button, follow our shows because that way you get email notifications when we post a show. You can actually come into the chat room like Duck has done, hang out with folks here. And that'll get more active in the coming months as we get back into college football season. You can also email me anytime, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. Check me out on Twitter, or is it X, at hpolysports. You can go to Facebook, although I don't do much there. Like I said, that's my daily Candy Crush prize that I got to get. Or, you know what, you can call in during the show. Call in live. 319-527-6706. The added bonus, of course, is that you can hit the one on your phone and a little icon pops up, a little raised hand icon, so I know, hey, somebody wants to talk, and I can do that. As I've said in recent weeks, if you're calling through the Skype connection or whatever the direct connection is, I would prefer it, if possible, that you go into the chat room and tell me you're calling, because if I don't recognize a phone number, especially if it's one of those 111 numbers, chances are I might not take the call, especially if I'm busy with something on a topic. But if you come into the chat room and let me know, then I will be sure to take your call. So today we heard news that Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is separating from his wife of 18 years. He's, of course, noted for his draconian COVID policies and other liberal policies, which included not only lockdowns, but also visits to citizens to check their location history on their phones. He made the announcement via social media. I'll tell you what, I have a niece who married a Canadian. I believe her kids are dual citizens. I could be wrong on that, but they were born here, I'm pretty sure. I know they were, actually. And so she lives in Canada now with her husband and two sons. And they had visited the U.S. last year, or not last year, back in 2021, I think it was. And when they returned, they actually flew to like Buffalo or somewhere near and then walked across the bridge because it was easier than flying in, believe it or not. But they had to install apps on their phones, including their kids, who I believe at the time were underage, not minors. They had to install apps on their phones. Now, they did not stay in their main house. They have a lake house, not super remote, but pretty remote. And they stayed there because it was more isolated. They got visits every day from people checking their location history on their phones because of an app that they were required to install. I mean, yeah, we had it bad here in some places, but that, sorry. I'd have just said I didn't have a phone, or I'd have gotten a sledgehammer and slammed it down right in front of them. There's no way in hell I would allow that. It's already bad enough that any app you add through your Play Store or your App Store or whatever is probably monitored anyway and uses that. I mean, a lot of apps do use location. I mean, your Maps app uses your location, obviously. Remember I talked a couple years about state of Florida requiring you to use an app when you harvested certain game while out hunting. You were required to check in on that app. You weren't allowed to call. You were required to check in on that app and give details of your harvest. You shoot a deer, you got to give various stuff. Well, what does that tell them? It tells them, here, we know where this gun owner is. Again, no thank you, folks. Excuse me, taking a sip of my electrolyte water. Have to drink electrolytes in the summer when I'm out paddling all the time. But yeah, putting an app on my phone that gives my location to government authorities. Nope. Hard no. So I got to hold on just a second, folks. I got somebody calling me on my regular phone. Hold on just a second. Okay, we can stop it. It was a buddy of mine. We've been talking about some questions. We've each got about some auto issues, and I wanted to take his call before I wouldn't be able to talk to him the rest of the day. So anyway, yeah, an app on my phone that identifies where I am after I've just used a firearm to harvest an animal while hunting. Yeah, not going to happen. Not going to happen. So in the Pittsburgh synagogue shooting case, a federal grand jury has convicted the shooter, Robert Bowers, on 63 counts and has sentenced Bowers to death. But there's a twist to it, of course, from the Epoch Times story. So basically, this dude went into a Pittsburgh synagogue, shot up a lot, killed 11 people. He's been given the death sentence by jurors in what's called a historic decision that marks the first federal death penalty handed down under the Biden administration, the La Dopi Nostra. So today, they voted unanimously to recommend that 50-year-old Mr. Bowers be put to death for the 2018 massacre. Now, in federal cases, all 12 jurors have to agree to a death sentence. Otherwise, the penalty would have been a life sentence in prison without parole. A judge will formally sign off at a later date. Now, in June, He was convicted of counts, which included 11 counts of obstruction of free exercise of religious beliefs resulting in death. I didn't even know there was a charge called that. It's a landmark decision because it's the first that they've successfully sought and won the death penalty since Dopey Joe took office. When he was running, Dopey Joe, of course, pledged to abolish the death penalty. I got news for you. I'm not necessarily pro-death penalty either. But the DOJ has imposed a moratorium on executions while it takes on a review. It's not clear Mr. Bowers will ever be put to death. He shot his way into the Tree of Life Synagogue October 27th of 2018, killed members of the Dor Hadash, New Light, and Tree of Life congregations, which shared the building. According to testimony, he told police at the scene that all these Jews need to die. Here were his victims: Joyce Feinberg, or Feinberg, 75, Richard Gottfried, 65, Rose Malinger, 97, Dr. Jerry Rabinowitz, 66, brothers David and Cecil Rosenthal, ages 54 and 59, respectively, Bernice Simon, age 84, her husband Sylvan Simon, 86, Dan Stein, 71, Melvin Wax, age 87, and Irving Younger, age 69. Bowers, no remorse. He told mental health experts that he viewed himself as a soldier in a race war. He said he took pride in the attack, and his only regret was that he didn't manage to shoot more people. During the first part of the sentencing portion, he was found to be eligible for the death penalty. They gave arguments, both sides, on the merits, one way or the other. His defense team didn't dispute that he planned and carried out the attack, but argued that he suffered from a prolonged mental illness and experienced delusions. Prosecutors denied that mental illness had anything to do with it, cited his statements to law enforcement. Apparently didn't show much reaction, although he did talk at length with his attorneys. Most of the victims' families said he deserved to be put to death. The family, including her daughter of Rose Malinger, 97-year-old Rose Malinger, thanked the jurors and said a measure of justice has been served. She went on, returning, "The sentence of death is not a decision that comes easy, but we must hold accountable those who wish to commit such terrible acts of anti-Semitism, hate, and violence." That's what the family said in a written statement. Rabbi Jeffrey Myers, who was able to take cover in a bathroom during the attack, thanked the jury. His statement was, "It is my hope that we can begin to heal and move forward." Isn't it ironic that the first federal death penalty handed down during La Dopey Nostra is a hate crime? Isn't it more ironic that it's an anti-Semitic hate crime, given that I'm pretty sure Dopey Joe is an anti-Semite himself? I mean, if the DOJ fights to either A, not execute at all, or at least delay it, you got to wonder how much longer Dopey Joe would be able to hold on to the Jewish portion of his voter base. And again, I don't think he has as much of a voter base. I mean, I'm making it sound like he's got this huge groundswell of support. It's pretty obvious he doesn't, but it'll be interesting. Now, Charlie Kirk tweeted out a story, or did he X out a story? Yeah, what is that with it? Twitter being called X now, about an unlicensed California lab where the CDC detected as many as 20 potentially infectious agents, including COVID, HIV, hepatitis, and herpes. Now, kind of surprising that Charlie Kirk would tweet out a story from NBC News surprising that NBC News would post a story like this. Here's the story. Local and federal authorities spent months investigating a warehouse in Fresno County, California that they suspect was home to an illegal, unlicensed laboratory full of lab mice, medical waste, and hazardous materials. The Fresno County Public Health Department has been, quote, evaluating and assessing the activities of an unlicensed laboratory, unquote, in Reedley. They said all the biological agents were destroyed by July 7th following a legal abatement process by the agency. The evaluation required coordination and collaboration with multiple federal and state agencies to determine and classify biological and chemical contents on site, in addition to assessing jurisdictional authority under this unique situation. Found various chemicals being stored. Inspection by county public health officials allegedly turned up medical devices thought to have been developed on site, such as COVID and pregnancy tests. Certain rooms of the warehouse were found to contain several vessels of liquid and various apparatus. Also observed blood, tissue, and other bodily fluid samples and serums, and thousands of vials of unlabeled fluids and suspected biological material. Hundreds of mice at the warehouse were kept in inhumane conditions, court documents said. I don't know. Whatever. The city took possession, euthanizing 773 of them. More than 175 were found dead. CDC tested the substances, detected at least 20 potentially infectious agents, which included coronavirus, HIV, hepatitis, and herpes. Prestige Biotech was the tenant. It's a company registered in Nevada and unlicensed for business in California. City officials spoke with Jiqueen Yao, who was identified as the company president, although emails included in the court docs. Yao told officials that Prestige Biotech moved assets belonging to a defunct company, Universal Meditech, to the Reedley warehouse from Fresno after UMI went under. Prestige was a creditor to UMI, identified as its successor. Wow. Unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, we're literally talking about whether or not, I mean, for the last couple of years, whether or not COVID was created in a lab or through just an unfortunate lab leak, or whether it was a wet market in China, which we kind of know wasn't. But here we've been saying, I mean, we've been defending, or we haven't, people have been defending China, and people have been going to all kinds of lengths to say that COVID wasn't manufactured or created. You would think, funny, with this kind of stuff, wouldn't have COVID pregnancy tests. That's really scary. So, yeah, we're sitting here being told it's not China, it's not this, and then we got the stuff in our own country. Questions have come up. Sue from New Mexico, Tsunami, Vito, and others have asked, is this another plandemic? They're getting ready for this. Well, I mean, this doesn't, it shouldn't shock you, but at the same time, what the hell? Right here in our own country, it's happening now. This stuff. Yeah, I keep saying it, and I'm just as guilty as anyone else of not doing more to fight back on this. But what in the hell is happening that this is being allowed? How did this company get away with this as long as they did? I mean, a restaurant can't stay open if they're not clean enough. And here we have labs with herpes, HIV, COVID. I mean, really, 20 infectious agents. How does that happen? I don't know. I mean, I'm dumbfounded. Why is this being allowed? Why are, like I say, I can be investigated for not keeping good. I mean, they're breaking into to Mar-a-Lago over documents that a president was allowed to have, if he especially if he declassified them. But it's taken this long to find out about an unlicensed lab. It's like the other thing, you know. I mean, they're able to find out damn near everyone who was at the Capitol on January 6th of 2021, but they can't find who brought a bag of cocaine into the White House. That's the kind of idiocy we're dealing with, or the duplicity. I mean, that's just it. Maybe that's the problem. Is it duplicity or is it just mere idiocy? I mean, we just don't. It's probably a mix of both, and even more. But I don't know. I don't know where we are today, folks. I think we're all asking that. Christy Luchadora on Twitter, X, whatever, has said, you know, this is the time to keep Jesus close. If you're wavering in your faith, read more. Dig into your Bible. If you don't believe, man, face the consequences, because the day of reckoning is coming. And God can't be happy with us. Anyway, more details about the death of the former chef of Barack and Big Mike Obama. So this is a bizarre one. This is from the New York Post. And it's more details about this guy's death, Tafari Campbell or whatever his name was. You got to hear this. I know some people are going to say, you're harping on it, Hank. What the hell? There's a reason for it. Part of my transition to my current career. Okay, first, there is a video, and it said he was proficient. It said proficient swimmer. Now it comes under scrutiny. It says netizens are questioning news reports that claimed that Campbell died from a paddleboarding accident. Saying they were saying his proficiency in swimming. So there's more details that have come to light, and it doesn't make it clearer. It makes me question it a hell of a lot more. You'll understand why when I read the story. The fellow paddleboarder who was with Barack and Big Mike's personal chef when he drowned near their Martha's Vineyard compound is also a staffer to the former president and reportedly tried to save the chef from drowning. Female staffer was with Tafari Campbell the moment the renowned chef fell off his paddleboard and into a pond before disappearing under the water. According to the Daily Mail, the woman, whose name wasn't revealed, tried desperately to save her colleague, but didn't reach him in time. Massachusetts Mass Live. The woman then rushed back to shore where she asked for help, with a Secret Service agent calling for emergency services from the Obama estate in Edgartown. Insiders told the outlet the woman was lucid and clear and did not appear to be intoxicated. The witness said Campbell struggled to stay afloat and wasn't wearing a life jacket while out on the water, officials said. 45-year-old's death doesn't appear to be suspicious based on the evidence collected in the now-closed probe. A toxicology report is pending. This happened a week and a half ago. A week and a half ago, this happened. And it's already closed. Campbell was found Monday in 8 feet of water, roughly 100 feet from the shore of the former commander-in-chief's property. Well, they didn't say that before. After first responders received a call about the incident Sunday evening, the Obamas, who were not at home at the time of the drowning, said in a statement last week that Campbell was a beloved part of our family. Today, blah, blah, blah. He was a sous chef at the White House while Barack and Big Mike were in office. Okay, so why am I not getting the whole story that I had before? There was a whole story that told more about this. This is not the same story I saw before. Interesting. Interesting. So I'm going to type something in here because there is more. Okay. So I'm finding a more updated article, hopefully. Not wearing a life jacket, blah, blah, blah. Maybe that's all it was because I just couldn't believe what I was reading anyway. Okay. That was it, but I just went into all my questions. Okay, so first he was an avid swimmer. Now, social media posts show him as less than proficient. A fellow staffer, female, was his paddleboard companion. Apparently not his wife, whatever. She's also a staffer of the Obamas, but her name isn't being released. Huh? Imagine this being a staffer or former staffer of Donald Trump or George W. Bush or any other conservative or Republican politician. You think we might be reading, seeing, or hearing the name of the staffer? Think also we'd be hearing that it was suspicious, maybe intimations of an affair? Yeah, this is decidedly off. She tried to get to him, but then went to shore and enlisted the help of a Secret Service agent. Now, we're told, and this is about the only fact that I firmly believe, that the Obamas were not at home when it happened. We weren't hearing that before, but be that as it may, why are former staffers in the company of Secret Service agents, or at least one agent? Why have we not heard the identity of that agent? Seriously, is every former staffer, including a personal chef, protected by Secret Service agents? I mean, why would Secret Service be there if the Obamas aren't home? Then again, who better than a Secret Service agent to oversee the details of a death that would, given the circumstances, raise eyebrows? Yep, an agent from something along the lines of the Secret Service or the FBI or whatever. Again, as I mentioned before, we are finally hearing that Tafari Campbell wasn't wearing a personal flotation device. But if we are to believe the conflicting details of his swimming ability, why was he not wearing one? Why are we not sure whether or not he had one with him? I keep going back to two missing details that really bother me. One, why are we not hearing whether or not the paddleboard was found or recovered? And when in the sequence of events it may have occurred. Told that authorities were alerted that evening, but this happened during the daylight, I would assume. Why are we not hearing whether or not the board was found? Two, why are we not hearing anything about whether or not he was wearing his leash, his board leash? Sorry, I know it may seem irrelevant, but given the location and the probable conditions, it's a pretty major detail. I'll add another couple questions. Did the Secret Service agent or agents even attempt to find or locate him? I mean, given their job duties, one would think going after him would be a rather significant part of the job description. Let's pretend it was Dopey Joe or Barack or Big Mike or one of their daughters. Do we really believe the Secret Service would make a phone call and wait for first responders versus entering the water and doing everything they can to rescue whoever it might have been? Part of the Secret Service's job to prevent, as much as possible, situations that could result in a calamity? I mean, wouldn't a Secret Service agent want to be sure someone in his or her charge going out on open water on a stand-up paddleboard can swim or has a personal flotation device or is leashed to their board? Look, I know, as a stand-up paddleboard and kayak tour guide, I do not allow our guests to get on a board or a kayak without a personal flotation device. It's a state law, first of all, but it's also basic safety. We don't make them wear it, but by law, it must be on the vessel. Kayak, paddleboard, canoe, doesn't matter. Powerboat. Hell, you go on a cruise ship, they may not have it sitting there, but personal flotation devices, one per passenger and staffer, are required. Yet we're not even hearing about whether he had one, just, oh, he didn't appear to be wearing one. Look, I would also think that the Secret Service agents would require their agents to do a hell of a lot more than make a phone call to local first responder entities. Simply making a call and then waiting, something is way off here, folks. Way off. We're only now hearing about the Secret Service involvement, because they can't really keep it under wraps. People are going to ask questions. I mean, I guess somebody would be watching their house even if they're out of town, because you don't want somebody there compromising. But I would think that that would be a different type of security detail. It wouldn't be Secret Service agents. It'd be a security firm of some sort, but not Secret Service agents. Their job is to protect people, not property. I mean, it wasn't Secret Service guarding the Capitol building on January 6th. It was Capitol Police. As an example. Yes, yeah, something is so far off here. So far off. Look, don't just take my word on it. Call around. Call a local company that offers paddleboard or kayak or canoe tours or whatever. Call them and ask them, especially a paddleboard company or a company that rents surfboards, let's say. You know what? Another reason you keep a leash? One, so you don't lose your board. But two, in open water like that, and I continue with this, because it only makes sense, not just a matter of safety, but makes sense. You're on open water. Wind can come out of nowhere. It's on the intercoastal. It's on the vineyard and all that. It may not be way out in the right on the ocean, but it's open water. You're out there. Wind comes out of nowhere, folks. We have a couple times this summer. I've been out. I was out one night in a squall. And I was looking at weather apps before the tour. Half hour into the tour, a squall came out of nowhere and had us stranded on an island there that we always visit. It wasn't luck. I mean, we were there at the island, but we were stranded there for 2.5 hours. Past weekend, we were on a tour, and a fellow guide had a second tour out. We do two tours, and one of the guides took the small tour out for our late tour, and another guide and I stayed behind to put away vessels so that we wouldn't be out there till 3 a.m. putting stuff away. So we only had a couple guests, so it was easy for us to get everything packed because we had a lot of vessels on the first tour. Where we go from, our vessels would be in the way if we just left. Would be fair to people that are also using the facility. So that's why we do that kind of thing. But our guide was out at the island that we visit, and a storm, again, came out of nowhere. Was not on radar. all night, cropped up on radar maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes beforehand. And I mean, this thing was blowing. There was rain and lightning and thunder. Now, he caught a break and actually brought the guest back. We actually had a guest dump in her kayak when this happened. But yeah, anybody on a paddleboard is wearing a leash, because in such a wind, that board blows halfway across the Indian River Lagoon in this particular case, but Edgartown Pond in the other, in the case of the Obama staffer. There's no way on God's green earth I would let somebody go out without a PFD and without a leash on a board. It's not a possession thing. It's not a protect your equipment. I mean, that's part of it. But you know what? If you're out 100 feet offshore, and we presumably he was going to go much further than that. If you're out a quarter mile or a half mile or a mile offshore, and you, as we call it, dump, in the right wind, your board is gone. It's halfway across the damn body of water. You can't swim after it. The wind is going to take it. The waves are going to take it. Why are we not hearing about this other staffer? And why is he there without his wife and kids? I mean, okay, let's pretend he got invited up there for whatever reason. Why weren't the Obamas home? I mean, it all just doesn't, we're not hearing details. They started out with with nebulous details, but those details were too easy to really look into. So the cover-up, and this sure is looking like a cover-up, becomes more impossible to construct. Damn, I'm going to keep following this one this summer, folks. So if you're tired of hearing about the Obama chef dying in a paddleboard accident, accident, it's air quotes, message me on Twitter or something. Tell me either, A, you don't want to hear it, or I'll save it for the hankerings on Thursdays when I do those. This stinks to high heaven. Now, maybe it was something innocent, like he's just having an affair. She decided to go out and knock him off his board. Maybe the Obamas literally had nothing to do with it. But would Secret Service be complicit in that? I don't think so. But would they be complicit if it was something that would affect the reputation, legacy, or criminal exploits of Barack and Big Mike? Hell yes. Now, previously I never would have guessed that, said that of a Secret Service agent. But a Secret Service agent who works with and for Barack and Big Mike or Dopey Joe, pretty obvious. Most of our government agencies have been compromised the last couple of years. Even before. It was probably, I mean, stuff was happening under President Trump, but it had begun before that. And that's why they worked so desperately to rig the election. Cam off this for the time being. But it ain't over. Oh, no. Okay. Moving on. Northwestern football, in a rather casual manner, has added Skip Holtz, son of former Arkansas, Minnesota, and Notre Dame coach Lou Holtz, and South Carolina coach as well, to their football staff as special assistant to the head coach, David Braun. This almost makes sense, as their new coach has no head coaching experience, and he faces a world of turmoil after the Pat Fitzgerald suspension and subsequent firing. Now, Skip Holtz has been a head coach at UConn, East Carolina, South Florida, Louisiana Tech. He's also recently led the Birmingham Stallions to two consecutive USFL titles. Now, apparently, he will continue as Birmingham's coach, serving his role at Northwestern on a temporary basis for this season. The idea is to bring a quote, holistic perspective as David Braun will focus on calling the defense for his first season. After all, that was his original reason to go to Northwestern, was to serve as defensive coordinator. Meanwhile, another former Northwestern football player has filed a lawsuit alleging hazing and racial discrimination. Ramon Diaz filed a lawsuit against the school Wednesday, alleging he was hazed and mistreated in the program largely because of his race. An offensive lineman from 2005 to 2008 alleges he was subject to hazing that included the mocking of his Mexican heritage, along with microaggressions from comments made by former offensive line coach Brett Ingalls, as well as sexualized acts that have previously been alleged by other former players. He says several Northwestern coaches witnessed hazing incidents or should have been aware of them. Lawsuit claims two former assistants, Ingalls and James Patton, who also coached the offensive line, made racist, embarrassing, degrading, and harassing remarks toward Diaz and other players. According to the lawsuit, Ingalls and Matt McPherson, a longtime Northwestern assistant still with the program, witnessed hazing incidents and took no action to address and or prevent them from happening. Also says Adam Cushing, the tight ends coach at the time, should have been aware of the hazing and mistreatment. Diaz told ESPN, "There is a culture that has been condoned by the athletic department and university that has allowed these coaches to behave the way they do. I believe focus should be shifted toward the athletic department specifically, but Northwestern at large. The atmosphere will not change systematically if that does not happen." McPherson has been mentioned in other lawsuits and is being investigated. Now, Patton left Northwestern after Diaz's freshman year. He's a coach at Miami of Ohio, the offensive line. Ingalls is an offensive analyst at Michigan. Cushing was at Northwestern through 2018, and he's now Duke's offensive line coach. Ingalls called the accusations baseless. He said, "I've dedicated my entire career to mentoring and coaching young men of all races, ethnicities, and backgrounds, to all individuals, and have continued to do that throughout my coaching career." He also addressed them with Wolverines head coach Jim Harbaugh, who, by the way, has got his own suspension, and the university's human resources department, and noted that the school has not had one concern raised during the time here. Northwestern is reviewing the allegations, of course. Which brings us, well, first of all, why is this happening a mere, 15 years after he departed Northwestern? At least we know these former players are doing it for the money. I mean, hey, they didn't have NIL back then. You know what? I shouldn't say that. Wait for lawsuits, wholesale lawsuits for that. Former players coming forward and saying they should have gotten NIL. Finally, as it concerns Northwestern, the school has hired an attorney to lead the investigation into the program's culture and accountability mechanisms. Whatever the hell that means. But it's not the hire, it's who they hired, and I still can't believe it. Here is the story from ESPN. You're not going to believe who they hired, folks. Northwestern hires ex-U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch to lead inquiry. Lynch, now working for the New York-based law firm of Paul, Weiss, Rifkind, Wharton, and Garrison, will begin her reviews immediately. President Michael Schill has said Lynch's findings will be made public, unlike those of a university commission investigation of allegations within the football program earlier this year. The earlier investigation, which corroborated some of the allegations, initially resulted in a two-week suspension for Coach Pat Fitzgerald. Schill soon reconsidered, fired the coach 3 days later, citing a culture that had been partially broken. Former football players, as well as a former volleyball player, who alleges hazing and abuse under Coach Shane Davis. The school also announced July 13th that baseball coach Jim Foster had been relieved of his duties after an investigation into allegations of bullying and mistreatment. I got news for you, folks. You know, Northwestern for years was terrible in football. if this indeed is the responsibility for their semi-resurgence, this quote-unquote culture problem, didn't happen in a vacuum. It didn't happen without the knowledge of the administration of that university. Schill says, he's determined that with the help of Attorney General Lynch, we will become a leader in combating the practice of hazing in intercollegiate athletics and a model for other universities. We will provide all of our students with the resources and support they need and do whatever is necessary to protect their safety and ensure that our athletics program remains one we can all be proud of. Lynch served as U.S. Attorney General from 2015 to 2017 under President Barack Obama. She served as U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of New York and has made several stops in private practice. No timetable has been announced, but she will provide updates to Schill and to the Audit and Risk Committees of the school's Board of Trustees. Wow. Just wow. This has to be a joke, right? Or maybe Loretta Lynch and her team will discuss their grandchildren. Seriously, I can't think of a more idiotic and somewhat controversial hire. With her baggage and her skewed, at best, sense of ethics, Loretta Lynch may be just about the last person I would think of. Then again, we also have Ben Crump on the scene. So it gives new meaning to the word collusion. Yep, you heard that right. At least one player filing suit has hired Ben Crump as his attorney. Yeah, ambulance drivers, beware. Finally, and I mean finally, this is our last story tonight. It appears that Iowa State Cyclones football will be without quarterback Hunter Deckers as a result of a gambling probe by the state as well as by the NCAA. It's now up to 7 athletes that are charged with in a gambling sting. Gambling investigations at Iowa and Iowa State have now resulted in criminal charges filed against several current or former athletes, with ex-Hawkeyes basketball player Aaron Ulis and Cyclones quarterback Hunter Deckers the ones with the highest profiles. Aaron Ulis, by the way, I believe entered the transfer portal. Pretty sure he entered the transfer portal after this past offseason. I don't know where he is. I'm going to look him up because I should have looked that up for y'all. But of course, I hadn't looked at this yet, so I because I didn't know it was up to 7 people. So Aaron Ulis has transferred to Nebraska. And he is now in the mix. So Aaron Ulis and Iowa State quarterback Hunter Deckers each are accused in the complaints of tampering with records related to an Iowa Criminal Division investigation into sports gambling. Current athletes also could face a loss of eligibility. According to Johnson County online court records, charges have been filed against Ulis Christensen and Iowa kicker Aaron Blum. Now, Blum had the job for like 2 games last year before he lost it to Drew Stevens. Hunter Deckers was charged in Story County, where Ames is. Also charged were football player Dodge Souser, Iowa wrestler Paniro Johnson, and former football player Ayoma Uwazariki. He's actually drafted by the Broncos last year and was suspended indefinitely by the NFL last month for betting on games during his rookie season. The attorney for Deckers and Souser said both would plead not guilty. Deckers is skipping preseason camp. Ulis apparently said placed wagers using a FanDuel account set up under his brother's name. He was under the legal gambling age of 21, made about 1,850 wagers totaling $34,800, with at least one placed on an Iowa sporting event. and over 430 of them placed on NCAA basketball and football games. Baseball player Christensen, Garrett Christensen, played in 11 games for the Hawkeyes, used his phone to make 559 wagers, totaling 2,400 with DraftKings, 24 on Iowa sporting events. The event was under, the account was under his mother's name. Good God. So there were other names that were mentioned in various places, but it did not make the investigation. So interesting. Tampering with, I guess tampering would be like using someone else's name. That would be tampering with the account. So I'm going to call tonight. As I said, it's a short show tonight. But next week, we will begin our college football segments for the 2023 season. There's a lot to talk about, given the potential implosion of the Big 12. They got a rather weak streaming deal with Apple TV. The potential of Florida State leaving the ACC. Colorado, of course, mentioned leaving the Pac-12, going to the Big 12 starting next season. Not to mention the Big Ten appears poised to swallow some more high-profile programs. Sounds like it. Now saying Washington and Oregon are part of it. I got a message the other day from someone saying Florida State and Clemson were part of it. I mean, what the hell? The Big 27? So anyway, that's it, folks, for this week. I've got a lot going on. Got to take care of the dog with the wife gone for a couple weeks. So I will be back. I'm going to do a hankerings tomorrow. I will send the stuff out, but I'm going to do a short hankerings because I'm going to talk more about the Obama paddleboard stuff. It just doesn't make sense. I might even have my one of my bosses on the phone to talk about it. We'll see. We shall see. In the meantime, have a good evening. Have a great rest of your week. Have a great weekend. Be safe. Be vigilant. Question what we're hearing. Don't let it just stand pat. Question what we're hearing. And hold people accountable. We've got to talk to our representatives at whatever level of government when things are not right. It's that simple. We cannot allow it to continue on this basis and expect that we're not going to get something better. Have a good night, folks. We'll be back. I'll be back tomorrow with hankerings, probably around 1 o'clock Eastern time. Have a good night.
Good night, folks. Bye-bye.